Second.
Okay, it's really such a pleasure to be here today, to see a lot of familiar faces, and to teach about Nechama Leibovitz. For some people, when you hear about Nechama Leibovitz, the name, you say, of course, Nechama Leibovitz. Either I studied with her, or I know about her, and other people, who is Nechama Leibovitz? And that saddens me so much, because Nechama Leibovitz really was one of the preeminent teachers of Torah that we had throughout the decades during her life, and her influence is really very, very extensive. So it's really my pleasure to teach about Nechama Leibovitz, and for those who have certain anecdotes or remember their experiences in her classes, though I'd love people to share those with us. And sometimes you speak to a lot of people and they say, you know, I had her when I was in Machon Gold, or I had her in certain of my experiences. And I didn't really appreciate her then or realize what a great scholar I was learning from and what a missed opportunity. For me, I went to some of her adult classes when I was in Michlala for the year. She was not teaching in Michlala, but I went to her classes. But my real connection is through my, on the one hand, my mother, who wrote all of the Gilyonot answers, which we'll talk about. She used to put out sheets every week of the Parshat HaShavua, and you answered them, and you sent it back to her. So my mother religiously did that, because my mother, after the Holocaust, was in Israel for many years and for her elementary school and high school education. But especially my father. Well, let me just tell you who my mother is. Not everyone might know. My mother is Yaffa Eliach Alea HaShalom. She is the big Holocaust historian, wrote a lot about education in the realm of scholarship with Holocaust. She established the first Holocaust Center in the United States. If you ever go to Washington and you go to the museum in Washington, there is the big exhibit of her town, Eishishuk. She collected thousands of pictures of her town and interviewed. And she really started this whole idea of how you do Holocaust commemoration, how you collect pictures, how you do interviews. And she really was a huge influence. And the way we do Holocaust history and research today is really thanks to her. Her yahrzeit was last week. She passed away 6 years ago. Yeah?
Well, I remember when my kid was started flatbush in sixth grade, they said, oh, they're by the house next door across the street, because the teacher said, the children don't even know what the Holocaust is. Let's have a building and buy it. This little house, somebody, one family, written a nine brick. And they took it and they made that. That's where the children had to go across the street and learn about the Holocaust in those days.
Right, that my mother established that. But my father, Rabbi David Eliach, Alav HaShalom, he passed away at 99 a year ago. We also, just after Yontif, celebrated his yahrzeit. And he was a Yerushalmi, sixth generation Yerushalmi, and he was a teacher and then the head of the program in a place called Motza, which was a school for refugees in Israel. And then he became the head of Kfar Batya, also a school for mostly refugees that was set up by American Mizrahi women. And he was the principal there. And he worked with a man called Chaim Tzvi Enoch, who was a German and came to Israel and brought all of his educational ideas to Israel. And one of the circle of Chaim Tzvi Enoch was Nechama Leibovitz. So she would come on a regular basis to Kfar Batya to speak with the teachers, to see model lessons. And she had a very close relationship with my father. So my father was very close to Nechama Leibovitz. But when my father decided in 1953 to come to America, so there was a big breach in their relationship. As we're going to see, Nechama was a huge Zionist, and you had to live in Israel, and you had to speak Ivrit, and you could not leave the country, and especially when educators were leaving, she was very upset. So she really was very upset with my father, and only years later did they have, reconciliation, let's put it that way. Because she heard that my father is the principal of Flatbush, where they teach Ivrit be'Ivrit, and they teach Tzionut. So she said, okay, it was okay that you went to America, but it was a big brain drain from Israel, and she was very upset about that. And it's very interesting because a lot of her students were Americans eventually as time went on, and yet she really always fought against going back to America, but eventually she made her peace with it, but she would never come to America. They always wanted to invite her to teach the teachers to come here, but she never wanted to come. So this is what we're going to do in our 6 weeks together. Today we're going to do mostly a biography of Nechama Leibovitz, because her biography and the events that happened in her life really had a huge impact on how she taught, what she taught, why she wanted to become a teacher. And it'll also have a big influence on the direction that her life went. So we're going to learn about her life, and then over the next five, and we might start in a Iyun today. I hope we get that in just in the end as food for thought. And then we're going to do the Iyunim. If you look at the booklet, I gave you a biography. We're going to do a little more information and different, but I just want you to have in front of you the biography of Nechama Leibovitz to know. You don't have to look at it today, but I want you to have it at home, because it's important to know who Nechama Leibovitz was. So you don't have to take notes in the class, but this way it comes back with you. Also, the other classes, we're going to be doing the Iyunim, and we'll talk about what those are. But the lessons of Nechama Leibovitz. What I did was I copied them in Hebrew and in English. So you have the Hebrew and in English. Translation is never as good as the original. So I'm going to speak in English, of course, and teach it in English, but I'm mostly going to follow the Hebrew sources. But you have the translation, and you can follow the lesson and always flip to the English. So no problem. We have Cliff Notes with us, right, you know, back to back. So it will not be a problem. But I do want to keep to the original Hebrew with Nechama, at least as the sources, because that's very important. Everything about Nechama was about the text and Ivrit and understanding. So I gave you both because it's very important for you to have both. So this booklet is going to take us through our entire, time of learning together. So even though there are many pages, it's not that we're going to be doing so much, because Nechama, we're going to see, she was very interested in the Iyun, in going deep into the material, but you have so many pages because you have the English and the Hebrew together. So I just want to make sure that this comes when we continue our shiurim, and of course, when you want to learn about someone, you want to learn it in their words, how they really formulated. So we're going to start with Nechama's biography, because it's important to know who she was. So Nechama Leibovitz was born in 1905, and she died in 1997. And she was very active her entire life. Till the last months of her life, she was an active teacher. And I was alive during that time. I was in contact with her during those last years, and I was always so fascinated. She was the same. She was vibrant. She was sharp. She was personable. She remembered all the people that she was connected with, and she made those amazing contacts. And it marveled. I just thought it was amazing. And then I saw, I guess it's like a certain gene that certain educators have. My father, who passed away at 99, also, till the very end, was involved and invested in the students. There's something about being that kind of educator, that your whole life is focused on this, and you're devoted till the very end. But Nechama never liked to talk about her life. People always wanted to interview her and ask her about her life, and she was not interested at all. She always said, I'm not a museum. I'm not someone that you should interview, because my teaching is the most important thing. The messages that I'm giving as a teacher are the most important things. My personal life are not so important. We're going to discuss her personal life and her history and her teaching methods, because they are very important. And we would not have Jewish day school education today in the same way that it's done, especially in the Dati Leumi circles, the Mizrahi circles in Israel, and the modern Orthodox circles in the United States, but all the Beis Yaakov schools as well, and elementary yeshiva schools, if it was not for the approach of Nechama Leibovitz. She totally impacted how we teach Chumash today and how we teach Rashi today. So she had a huge impact, and that's why it's so important for us to know about her, because we'll see how she really had a lasting impact, not just on the people who actually had her as teachers, but she was a teacher's teacher. So she impacted the teachers, and that had an impact on education in general. So, Nechama was born on Gimel Elul, September 3rd, 1905, and she's born in Riga, Latvia, 2 years after her brother Yeshayahu. So there were two children in this family. It was Nechama and her brother Yeshayahu, and both really exceptionally gifted individuals. And the father felt, okay, I'm going to educate them at home and teach them myself, have some tutors, but really spend a lot of time at home. They spoke Hebrew at home. He would give them little tests in Tanakh on a regular basis. He would assign them reading material. So in addition, she never went to school when they were living in Riga because girls did not go to school then. So she was tutored at home. But she, at home, got the same education as her brother Yeshayahu. So that also, from a very young age, her education was very important. And she was on par with her brother Yeshayahu, and that also had a huge impact, because right away, and she always said, that really influenced her feeling that there is no discrepancy between what she could accomplish and between what her brother could accomplish. And her brother, Yeshayahu Leibovitz, also a very big thinker in Israel, and in some things they're exact opposites in their philosophy, which we will discuss. And Nechama Leibovitz, in her early years, age 1, 2, and 3, hardly spoke. And they were very worried about her, because what do you do? You know, she seems like she's understanding, but she's not speaking. They brought her to, as she tells... And now it's very interesting. Nechama didn't tell many stories about herself. So the stories that she told about herself are also important for us to understand why she chose those stories. She really did not speak a lot about her upbringing. But she always told that story because she felt that she wanted to encourage other people, to encourage students, to encourage teachers when they have students like that, or parents, that never to give up. Now we know, you know, so much theory about it, but then they didn't. So she always used to tell the story that, oh, I didn't speak till I was 3. They brought me to this big professor in Germany. Every doctor was a professor. And she said, oh, this young lady will speak a mouthful. And she loved telling this story that, you know, here she was, and then, you know, she became a big teacher. Now, in her house, they were a very cultured family. Father was a businessman, and they would read a lot of books. They were a religious family, and the father felt that they should really educate the students in a very important way. And his kids were like his students. What's fascinating is that she had a mother, Frida. We almost don't hear at all any mention about her mother. Mother was a regular homemaker, and really, the way Nechama tells it, of course, I'm sure she was a caring individual, but the stories that we have about her upbringing and the stories that she tells are always stories that are connected with her father, which is also very, very interesting, because he was the intellectual source in the house. Also, another anecdote that she loves telling. One time she slipped in the city in front of a tram that they had in those days, and she comes home and she says, oh, you know, this happened to me because I didn't daven this morning. So she felt from a very young age, oh, there's a strong connection between what I do and the consequences. And her father said, don't think that Hashem cares about every little detail. He's not worried about you, right? And it's fascinating because Nechama spent her whole life to show that your relationship with Hashem and the things that you do absolutely matter, as opposed to her brother, Yeshaya Leibovitz, who is very strong in you. Do the mitzvot because you have to do them, but don't try to think of tamei mitzvot or any kind of corollaries. But Nechama felt that everything that you experience is really a type of life lesson. The father felt that they have to move to a bigger city. The students, his children, need a better education, and he also wanted to expand his business. So they moved to Berlin. Berlin is the center of culture, and they move in 1919. And they move at age 14, and she goes to the gymnasia. She goes to the gymnasium. In those days, the secular public school was called the gymnasia, a very advanced school, but that's where you went. And she finishes high school at 20. So from 19... From the year 1919 till 1925, she is in high school, and then from the year 1925 to 1930, 5 years, she does university. Now, you have to understand, in Germany, university, which means if you went undergrad from the first year till graduating, so she got a PhD. I mean, there's no such thing as going undergrad to going for your MA and then going for your PhD. In Germany, you got a PhD after you went to college. You went from high school to college / graduate school, and she receives her PhD from the University of Berlin at Marburg. And she does her PhD, she writes her PhD on the Yiddish translation to Tehillim. And she does this, and she does it in the university at Marburg, even though she's in the University of Berlin, but she does it in a smaller campus. And actually, she studies with Rudolf Otto, who's one of the biggest philosophers of the time. He wrote The Idea of the Holy. Very fascinating and very interesting individual. But she wanted to avoid biblical criticism. If she was in the university in Berlin and she wanted to do something in biblical studies, then she would have to study biblical criticism. What's biblical criticism? That there are different authors to the Torah. And that was absolutely something that she didn't even want to be involved with, even just to get the degree, and she wanted to avoid that. So she wrote her PhD in comparative literature. And at the same time that she was going to the university, she also went to the Hochschule für Wissenschaft des Judentums, which is, right, the Berlin College for Jewish Studies. Now, there it was a very wide range of individuals. It wasn't necessarily a religious institution in the Torah Orthodox point of view. You had people from all the different strands of Jewish life who were there, and she was connected there with all these different individuals, Julius Gutmann, Ismar Elbogen, Leo Beck, Leo Strauss. So she was really exposed to all these different individuals. And what's fascinating about Nechama is this mix. On the one hand, she had this education from her father in the home. She had some tutors, but her formal Torah education was really in this kind of different environment where she went to this institute. She went to the Wissenschaft, the Hochschule für Wissenschaft, and she was also going to graduate school. But the whole time, she wanted to be a teacher of Torah. So even though she was exposed to all these different places, her goal was to be a Torah teacher. And while she was in graduate school, so she taught in the Hildesheimer schools, which are like an offshoot of the Rav Hirsch, Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch schools. And what's fascinating there is that she wanted to make sure that she was teaching Ivrit B'Ivrit. So she's teaching in these schools, she's teaching Torah, and she taught Ivrit B'Ivrit. Now in Germany, Ivrit B'Ivrit was not an idea that was important, because what language did they all speak and they all love? German. So you want to totally integrate into German culture. But she felt, no, I'm going to teach Ivrit B'Ivrit. And she wrote articles about teaching Ivrit B'Ivrit. So here she had this education, this background, but her goal was really to teach in the education system in Ivrit B'Ivrit and to show that that was an important, value. Also, she was a real Tzioni. She was a Zionist. She went to the youth movements of Kachol V'Lavan, and she was very involved in Tzionut. So she was a Tzioni, she liked Ivrit, and she wanted to teach Torah. What was her goal? To go to Israel. In the 1930s and 1920s and 1930s, you had a huge group of German intellectuals who started coming to Israel. And she is a young woman. She graduates at the age of 25 from college / graduate school, the University of Berlin. She receives her PhD, and then she marries her uncle. Her uncle came to eat with them every day lunch. Now, her uncle is her father's brother, Yedidya Lipman Leibowitz, and he is 56. I mean, he's 31 years older than Nechama is. So he's 56, she's 25. And he's already ailing. And right after she graduates, they buy tickets to go to Israel. Yeah. they get married, and they take a boat, and they go to Israel, and during the trip, even on the boat, his eyesight starts to fail, and he starts to get very sickly, and when they came to Israel, he was already in ill health. So she had to go out and totally support the family. So she goes out to be the breadwinner of the family, and she then becomes an important person in the education world in Israel. She didn't have other obligations. She had her husband, of course, but she hired someone to do the cooking and the cleaning and all of those kind of things because that wasn't her forte. And she went and she was a teacher, and they discussed a lot of their ideas, but she was really focused on teaching, on making sure that she supported the family. And what did she do? So when she comes to Israel, we see that they live in Kiryat Moshe in Yerushalayim, and she does this. Number one, she becomes a teacher in the Beit Midrash Lemorot Mizrahi Yerushalayim. She becomes a teacher for budding teachers in Yerushalayim. Now again, in those days, you went to high school. The Beit Midrash Lemorot is a high school. And after you graduated high school, you got a teacher's certificate and you went to teach. It's not like, oh, you had to go to high school. Then you went to college. The fact that Nechama went to college and she receives her PhD is already so far ahead. So in Israel in those times, you went to high school, you got your teacher's certificate, and then you went out to teach. So she's teaching 14 to 19-year-olds in this Beit Midrash Lemorot, Mizrahi, which means she identifies herself and aligns herself with the Dati Lumi community. And that is very much her hashkafa. Also, she teaches in the Beit Zeirot Lemizrahi. There was also a school for immigrant girls, and that had a dorm. So she's teaching in the Beit Zeirot Mizrahi, and originally she teaches Tanakh, literature, Jewish history, Hebrew. She does a lot, meaning she's really one of their most basic teachers. However, she already starts, when she's teaching these young women to be teachers, that one of the main ways to teach is to include the students, is to ask them questions, is to make them do the work and feel empowered. That everyone, when they read a text, has ideas, has questions, has to have input. So she did this with her students, and she said, this is the way that you have to teach your other students. Now, by 1941, 1942, World War II is raging. And what happens? They're not getting more immigrants. They're not getting new students into their programs. So what are you going to do? But the students are graduating. They have to go back to their moshavim, to the kibbutzim, to their cities, wherever they came from, and they have to go to be teachers. So what are you going to do in that situation? She says, okay, I am going to write gilyonot. That's how it starts. I'm going to write you sheets that you could keep up with your studies, even when you're outside of the classroom. And she starts writing these famous gilyonot sheets, in which she writes questions, does not give the answer, and they are spread. First of all, her students bring them home, and then it became so popular, everyone wanted a copy. So they start mimeographing them and sending them all around, and people in their kibbutzim, all of a sudden, you only have one copy, everyone sits around. It's like a group effort. We're going to learn together. Because in these places, there was hardly any education. Remember, you went to high school, you were a genius already, because you went to work after elementary school, and you were lucky if you really finished elementary school. So this became a huge way to really continue your education. And she was sending them out. So really, Nechama starts this first correspondent/podcast/internet/online education, in a sense, because you did not have to be in the classroom in order to answer the questions. But if you answered the questions and you sent them back to her, she marked every single one and would send it back to you. My mother remembers vividly. She was in the Tel Ra'anan, in the Youth Village Elementary School. She was in boarding school, elementary school, and high school. And then in Kfar Batya, and she sent back the gilyonot, and Nechama would write her comments, you know, in her red pen, as my mother remembers, and, you know, write, oh, this is good, or this is okay, or you didn't try hard enough. And she really answered everybody. So everybody, even people who weren't her students, my mother never took a class with Nechama Leibovitz face to face. She sat in many classes that my mother took because she came and evaluated the teachers that my mother was studying from. So that was really fascinating for Nechama Leibovitz. So she really started this whole kind of approach that you can really do kind of remote learning in this way. Now, what happened? A lot of people said, we don't know how to answer the questions correctly. We need the answers. So Chaim Chamiel, who was one of the big educators in Israel, he said, okay, let's see if we can get you to write some answers. So she starts putting out gilyonot, her questions, with the answers. And this was bound and was just given to teachers. And then they said, wow, this is amazing. Let's start binding them, writing it more extensively, and then let's make books out of this, because these are amazing. It's not just you're teaching lessons, you are really giving divrei Torah. It's a kind of way to learn Torah. So that's how the Iyunim, the major books that you usually see, the Iyunim of Nechama Leibovitz, came to pass. So in 1966, Breishit came out, 1969, the Shemot comes out, and then towards the end of her life more, the other volumes come out, but she doesn't have as much input in the later volumes of Vayikra, Devarim, and Bamidbar especially. Now, she's so successful as a teacher, and she does a lot of adult education, which means she doesn't only teach students in the classroom, she starts teaching a lot of women who want to come to classes, who don't have the ability to go to school, or who are older and want to continue their education. So when we are sitting here and learning together, really, you have to thank Nechama Leibovitz. Nechama Leibovitz was the first one in Israel to really have this adult education, to have this, like, women learning outside of a framework of school on a regular basis. We really should appreciate what Nechama did, because she is really beyond what you understand and appreciate her influence. Everyone said, okay, we want to have a piece of Nechama as well. So Nechama taught also in Tel Aviv University, in Hebrew University, in Bar Ilan, but usually she was in the education department. She did not teach in the Bible department. She taught in the education department. And then at the end of her life, she taught mostly from home. And a lot of people that you know who are men were taking classes from her either in BMT or in Gruss or in Machon Herzog or Turo, where she taught as well towards the end of her life. Carmi Horowitz made sure that she would be brought in onto the faculty, and she really had an influence throughout her entire life. And that is really the idea of Nechama in a nutshell. But what's fascinating, let's just talk about her educational approaches for a moment. What's interesting about Nechama is that she melds together the textual approach, the traditional approach, that we learn the classic Mefarshim, but she also brought some outside, interesting, more modern writers, because she was very interested in the literary approach, the language, the stories. What do we learn? What are the messages? And she wanted them to be a little more obvious. So she really emphasized, not only are we learning the text, which is very important, we also want to learn messages from it. And she also delved into the personalities and the life and the reactions. So her work also delves into, and we'll see some of it when we do Avram and Sarah, into, let's say, the personal lives of the Avot and Imahot. And that also brought up questions. Can you really discuss these issues of the Avot and Imahot? Can you look at them on a certain level as also being like you? Is there a danger in seeing the Avot and Imahot in a way that you can identify with them, or that they're also people? What is the fine line between reverence and also a certain kind of connection? So Nechama is one of the first to really, and of course, she's using Ramban and Rashi and the classic Mefarshim. But she is mining that idea. Also the question, oh, Makashela Rashi, you want to ask what's difficult for Rashi, but also she asked many times in her Gil Yonot, who do you agree with? Or what do you think? Are you allowed to ask that? Can you have an opinion? Should you have an opinion? Can you be connected without feeling that I can have an opinion? So Nechama Leibovitz, as we saw from her background, is really straddling and is really in this very important section of learning, of education. Where does the modern end and where does the traditional begin? And she's really on this important chasm that she really tries to show how you can bring certain things together. And some of her students became totally, you just learned the Mefarshim and you just learned the traditional sources. And some of her students said, no, let's also include a little more academic. So you can't even just see Nechama Leibovitz from her immediate students because each group, right, has Hasidim of Nechama Leibovitz. But the biggest impact is really in the traditional learning, in the learning parshanut of Chumash in that way. So that is also very fascinating. So on the one hand, she is a very classic teacher, but on the other hand, she is also a little bit of someone who wants to, you know, open your eyes. One method that she uses is pshat miguyas, is you have to learn the pshat, but it's always to teach you a lesson. You want to learn something from it. You always want to ask makashel Rashi. And Gabi Cohen, also one of her students, and he was the head of Machon Gold for a while, who was a very devoted student of hers, says that one of the things that she really contributed is that you learn Chumash like you learn Gemara, in the sense that you want to see what the different Mefarshim say. You want to see different views, and that is going to guide you. So before we adjourn for the day, we have our time. We still are in our zone. I want to already start reading and doing in Iyun. Because, again, to learn Nechama Leibovitz, what's the most important thing? To see how she teaches, what she teaches. I just want to see which copy I want to use. And for you to see her approach. So we're going to deal with some of the big issues of the day, but you'll really appreciate that Nechama Leibovitz really set the tone in all these different things. So we're going to learn the actual Torah of Nechama Leibovitz for the next few sessions that we have. So the most important thing is to get into the learning and to analyze what is she doing, how is she doing. And I would like to start with Vata'anea Sara from Lech Lecha. So we all just had this parsha. We all are familiar with the story. I'm going to do page 9, but you can absolutely look at from page 12 on, which is the English. So if you want to do the Hebrew, I'm starting on page 9. We had to photocopy the Iyunim. That's the best way to do them. So I hope everyone has their, you know, reading glasses or, you know. Yeah, we couldn't. It just made it too blurry, so I'm sorry about that. But we're here to learn, and we want to see what Nechama Leibovitz was teaching. Because what would Nechama Leibovitz want us to do? To learn, to see the words, and to actually learn the Torah. So how does Nechama Leibovitz build up her Iyunim? Remember, these Iyunim are what became her books. She was very involved in Breishit and in Shmot. We're doing one in Breishit, and we're going to do the rest in and the rest in Shmot. And we're just going to start, because I'm just going to whet your appetite. We're going to, you know, finish at our time slot. I just want to whet your appetite. Vata'anea Sara, and this way you have the English, so we can look it through before we learn it together, if you so please, right, for next time. Nechama starts with the story of Sara. And she keeps on saying, oh, Avram was promised children. Avram was promised children. Avram was promised children, that he'll be a great nation. But we know that he does not have any children, and Sarah is barren. And he asks Hashem, what are you going to give me? I don't have any children. The most important thing that I want are children. So what does Sarah do? And Sarah takes the initiative. So we're going to learn next time in detail what is the initiative that Sarah takes. But you have to understand Nechama, in general, did not like to do women's topics. She felt very uncomfortable with women topics. She felt uncomfortable with a lot of the parent-child topics. She felt that she really was not equipped in the same way to teach these topics. So this is a very unusual topic, and it'll be interesting to address what does Nechama see about the conflict with Sarah when she brings Hagar into the picture. So we're going to analyze it from a pshat point of view and from a textual point of view, from Nechama's point of view, what she does, but we're also going to do a meta-analysis. How is Nechama approaching this? So we're going to be doing many topics, learning together to not only understand what Nechama's doing, how she's doing, but also to learn these important lessons. Whenever they wanted to have a program on the radio of women in Tanakh, she would always balk and say, well, we should learn about everyone in Tanakh. We don't have sections in her Iyunim that really highlight the role of Nashim, of women, which is very important. For Nechama, she wanted to be under the radar. I am a regular teacher. I'm not just for the women. I am teaching Torah. She did not want to be, oh, I mostly do women's topics, or I mostly do these kind of ideas. She always dressed in a very tzanua way, very understated. She was always respectful for what people's comfort zone was. If men did not want to come to her shiurim, she was totally okay with that. She did not want to emphasize or push any agenda. She said, I am here to teach Torah. And many people tried to get her to join their different ideologies and their different groups to use her as an example. And she said, I'm never going to be used in that way. I just want my Torah and my views of how I teach and the messages that I'm giving to be the important messages. And in her own way, she was very, very influential and very effective. And Nechama really is one of these important teachers that we have. So we're going to do the Iyun, and we're going to see the emphasis of the relationship that Nechama is really, you know, focusing on when she's going to do this Iyun and this idea of Vatanea Sarai. When Sarai brings Hagar into the picture, did she do the right thing or the wrong thing? And are you responsible for the consequences of the actions that you do? And can you speak about the Avot and Imahot as maybe making mistakes or not realizing the consequences of their actions? Are you allowed to ask those questions, or can you make comments about those questions? So that is going to be the first Iyun that we do. The other Iyunim that we're going to study together are going to be the Iyunim in Sefer Shmot, the famous Iyunim of the Mieldot and of the personality of Moshe. And we're going to see a lot of Nechama's Torah. So we're going to be learning Torah together, but through the vehicle of Nechama's Iyunim. So next time, we're going to start with the Iyun Vatanea Sarah. Sarai, if you want to be ahead of the curve, because we're going to analyze, not just teach the Iyun. So if you want, right, you have all these booklets, you can look ahead and to keep in mind what we discussed about Nechama as a template for some of the questions and issues that we are going to discuss. Yes? What? Yes, yes. I took her. No, we had a it in a downstairs area.
One man was the lookout, and he kept looking at the window. He said, oh, she's coming, in Hebrew. And taxi came. She got out with a great dress, a plain gray hair, a coat for nothing. She got wet up these little flight steps, like a school flight, like we have in apartment buildings in Brooklyn. They're all, you know, high punch. She got into the room. He opened the door. Everybody in the room stood front like a great big Rebbe. And I remember one thing she said, because I was already teaching, right? She says, okay, and she spoke to men and women. Mm-hmm. And she's saying, and these are teachers.
Right.
Some in Israel, some go to